We have to free half the human race, the women, so that they can help to free the other half. A quote from the suffragette Emmeline Pankhurst, which I have used a number of times in essays where I have touched on the subject of feminism and the attempts to represent the importance and value of feminism to men who are often aggressively set against the feminist cause, either because they can't see what it would offer to them as men, or because they believe that it's going to take something away from them. And in this episode of the Science Fiction Podcast, here with Damian Walter, hello and welcome to today's episode. I want to try and make a case, not just for feminism and its value for men, but at the underlying mission of feminism that goes beyond even the label feminism, and that it's this underlying mission that I think is very, very important, both to men and to men who like science fiction, because I can probably hear some part of my audience at the moment saying, Damian, I just don't know what feminism has to do with science fiction, and, you know, not least the great history of feminist writers in the science fiction field, Margaret Atwood, to name but one. In fact, feminist science fiction in the form of feminist utopias really predates most of what we think of as science fiction. But there's something else in this as well, and that something is about stories and how we tell stories and how we take from stories large parts of who we are as people. And it's the stories we tell that we're really trying to liberate ourselves from. In that quote from Emmeline Pankhurst, the question is, what are we trying to free one half of the human population from, the women, so that they can turn around and free the other half, hopefully with the other half's help and assistance and cooperation? And there are many things that we need to be liberated from. Possibly. There are people who profoundly disagree with this argument, and maybe we'll discuss that a little bit in the course of this commentary. What things might we need to be liberated from? Let's say unjust legal structures. That's the very definition of privilege. The private ledger, the privilégié. My poor French there, which was the ledger of laws that applied to the elite of society in the medieval world. Hence, they were privileged, but not to the others. We want a legal system that doesn't discriminate against women. That's been a major fight, still is, in recent decades. Social oppression, the idea that, for instance, women should not be allowed to fulfill certain kinds of jobs in society. And there are still many ongoing arguments about this. Should women serve in the frontline military forces, for instance, I think is still up in the air as an area for discussion. But I want to suggest, from my own understanding of feminism and the many political frameworks that it's embedded within, that I think the ultimate thing we are liberating human beings from is an oppressive story. And I don't want this to sound trivial or to trivialize social justice arguments that are ongoing in society, which is one risk from making this argument. But actually, I think the thing that has the most power in our lives are the stories we tell about how humans should behave. And it's those stories that we're ultimately trapped within. Now, we can be supported and helped by them. They can be positive, constructive stories, but many people feel trapped within them. And liberalism as a whole, the task of liberation is ultimately about changing the story that we find ourselves within. And hence the relevance to the Batman and to the archetype of Batman more generally. This is the recorded long-form audio commentary on my video essay for the science fiction YouTube channel, Incel Batman. In this episode, hang around, it's going to take a little while to get there, but I am going to tell you the story of a very meta-modern Batman. I'm going to tell you the entire narrative of a Batman movie that I would make with a meta-modern Batman archetypal hero at the center of it. We're going to get there. It might take a little bit of time. We're having skipped the 2022 Batman movie, directed by Matt Reeves, the Batman, having been disappointed by many Batman movies, going really all the way back to the 90s. I really loved the Michael Keaton Batman movie. I think I was 12 when it came out. And I can't remember the order, whether I had read The Dark Knight Returns or whether I read that soon after. But it was that movie and that graphic novel by Frank Miller that got me into Batman as a character. And hence, I've always followed Batman. But like a large part of the audience for Batman, I've grown older. And versions of Batman aimed for children aren't very appealing to me. The DC iteration of Batman from the director whose name I forget, it's eluded me right now, but you know who I mean, who headed up the DC franchise. Didn't really do it for me. Neither did the Superman iterations. That director has been called a himbo auteur, and I think there's a kind of an element of himboism in those movies, which I'm partial to now and again. They just didn't quite hit the button. So I skipped Matt Reeves' The Batman until about a month ago. I watched it, and I was quite engaged. I wasn't engrossed, but I was quite engaged by the movie. And I was interested, particularly by how it portrayed men. And about halfway through the movie, it clicked that this was deliberate. There was a deliberate portrayal of men. And I think that The Batman is a movie about men, and specifically about a particular kind of male archetype and its relationship to a masculine phenomenon in our society at the moment, the phenomenon that's been now loosely umbrellaed as incel. I think there's a specific meaning to incel, the involuntary celibate, the mostly young men, but now some older as well, who don't feel they can form a relationship with a woman. There's a lot that can be said about that. I think there's genuine elements of status structures that men who are low in our hierarchies of society, the inescapable masculine dominated hierarchies of the world of business and the workplace, that men who are low in that status structure are going to find it much more difficult to find female partners. That's simply a fact. And there's also self-inflicted elements that I think are tied up with the sexualization of women, with the use of pornography, and other related issues that make it very difficult for men in this pattern to form a relationship, because they have a particular story that they're telling about women that no woman particularly wants to or can really fulfill. And there are all these complex issues wrapped into the core identity of incel, but it's also become an umbrella word for a whole, what has also been called the manosphere, online. The men going their own way community, MGTOW, which at various times I've kind of looked at with curiosity, and its home base on Reddit, in the way that our online communities now have these kind of places where they congregate. And that's a community about leaving women behind, leaving society behind in a way. I think it's kind of deeply confused. There's the Red Pill movement, which is quite a broad, largely right-wing political movement that claims that the ways we understand masculinity have been corrupted. The story of masculinity, that's interesting, isn't it, has been twisted, and we need to go back to a more traditional form of masculinity, along with lots of other reversions to various forms of conservative social structure, which is the whole idea of the red pill. The black pill, which is even darker, is the kind of the idea that we're all going to die anyway. The world is completely corrupt. There is no hope. I don't know very much about the black pill, but that's kind of my understanding of it. And these are all built on earlier attempts at a kind of what you might loosely call a masculinism, a match for the growing emergent movement of feminism through the 20th century and its kind of acceleration from the 1960s onwards, that we might ask the question of what a masculinism might look like. And there have been various answers to this. One that I know reasonably well and have spoken about before on the Science Fiction podcast is the Minnesota Men's Conference, which was an approach which has become quite common, has been replicated in a number of ways, of linking myth and masculinity, and that the archetypes that can be found in myth. Robert Bly was the spiritual leader of the Minnesota Men's Conference, and he connected the traditional myth of Iron John. I believe it's Iron John. Correct me if I'm wrong on the title there. To a new potential archetype of masculinity. And he talked about lots of insights into the formation of masculine identity, how modern men are separated from their fathers. Men go out to the workplace. They don't work with their sons. And this causes a kind of break in masculine identity. But this was looking at the story, the archetypes, the stories, and hence the identity of men, and making this connection between our stories and between how men see themselves in the world. Which brings us back to the Batman, where I think in the Batman there is at least an attempt, a kind of incomplete attempt, to explore this relationship between stories of men and real world masculine identity. And we have, of course, Bruce Wayne and the Batman, who is, I'm making a correction here, I describe him as an incel in the video essay. I think it's more accurate to describe him as emo or goth. There is a subtle divide between those two scenes that originated in different areas of pop music, basically pop rock music. But let's say that Bruce Wayne kind of fulfills that. And then the Batman, as we explore in the video essay, is some kind of idealized archetypal masculine identity that, very interestingly, Bruce Wayne, at the end of the movie, through his confrontation with the Riddlers, who become a kind of anonymous, masked movement of incels, Bruce sees the problem with that archetype, that hyper-masculine, aggressive, violent archetype. He has to be something more. Because really, that archetype, and it's, which it has in previous manifestations of the Batman, screamed, "I am vengeance." And as one very astute member of the science fiction community pointed out to me, Superman is liberty, freedom. Batman is vengeance, Or we might say Superman is justice, Batman is vengeance. The Joker is chaos, Lex Luthor is order. It would be very interesting to have them meet in storytelling. But there is the archetype, and we have Bruce Wayne realize that that I am vengeance archetype is really just a mirror of the incel archetype he's being confronted with, that it comes from the same anger, the same bitterness, the same resentments that manifest in the idealized form as the Batman are driving the incels who become the Riddler. And in this way, I think the Batman is pointing towards something very broken in our stories of masculinity that reach far beyond the Batman into our general storytelling and then out into our culture. And in the video essay, I try to talk about this a little bit through just one vector into the discussion, the French psychoanalyst Jacques Lacan, his theory of the mirror stage, and how we construct our ego identity, our persona, is drawn very heavily from stories, especially when we're very young. We draw from fairy tales, folk tales, and today comic books, superhero movies, and etc. And this forms a kind of seed of our masculine self-identity, the fantasy seed, which then is attached to the symbolic, where we take that fantasy of heroic self and we attach it to real-world symbolic structures, the billionaire industrialist today, the tech entrepreneur, the sports star, the rock singer, all of these symbolic structures that men might very often do try and become to fulfill our fantasy heroic identity. What are those words from Fight Club? Those Brad Pitt words that are very central to the movie, at least. I have read the novel, but a very long time ago. Are those words from Fight Club? They told us we'll be rock stars and movie stars, but we won't. But we won't. Very few men are going to be able to fulfill the symbolic manifestation of the fantasy in the world. It will take quite an alignment of genetic good fortune to be good looking and healthy enough to be born into a kind of place and time where you can do that. It's going to take quite a high level of wealth and social standing and status and privilege to be able to do that. Your chances of fulfilling that symbolic masculine fantasy, if you're born into the slums of one of the world's mega cities, pretty much zero. Might happen, but it would take a tremendous alignment of luck. So all of these factors are entirely real, plus all of the personal factors. What levels of discipline and drive would it take to fulfill that? And there's a tendency in our society, I don't think I want to get too deeply into this, but it's out there, it's real, to play the self-help personal development card on people, that you too can fulfill the archetype of the rock star, the movie star, the billionaire industrialist, the tech entrepreneur, whatever it may be, the football star, that you too can do that if you just find the right productivity hacks, if you develop the right mindset, if you join Andrew Thingy's Millionaire Mindset Academy. And whilst I don't want to completely dismiss the potential of personal development and responsibility for self, I think it's important to recognize that most of this area of the manosphere providing this advice is bullshit, complete and utter bullshit. that you're embedded in structures that are going to make fulfilling a fantasy quite difficult for you. And even if you can fulfill the fantasy, it's not actually going to help. It's just going to build a huge egoic structure. And this is why you see even the most successful Hollywood celebrities go crazy as they reach middle age, because this heroic structure can't be maintained. You can't really be Batman or Zinedine Zidane or insert the rock star of your generational choice. And of course, most men are going to come to realize this. But there's still this very deep conflict between the different parts of our personality structure, this story that we're telling ourselves that Lacan identified in his theory of the mirror stages. And this conflict is making our masculine story very unwell, sick. There's a sickness in the masculine psyche, and it's a sickness that is expressed through the Batman in the figure of the Riddler as an incel. He is the voice of resentment, who has been unable to fulfill, both because of structural issues, being born as an orphan, and failures of his own persona. He's been unable to fulfill the Batman fantasy. And so he's angry with all of the other men in the city, men who are largely failed. Bruce Wayne is a failure, to be frank. He realizes he can do more for all his billions and for all his Batman toys. He's basically failed up until the end of the movie. All of the men in positions of power that we see in the Batman are failures. They're unable to bring good to the city. They're bad leaders. They're corrupt. They've been taken in by the kingpin figure in Batman. I forget his name, the mafiosi. And the only way they can find release is through female fantasies that they encounter in the sex club that is the heart of the Batman story. It's a very adult story, and it's a very angry story about men. Both the structures that men are embedded within, which it sees as largely corrupt, which I think is the view of many, if not most, young men today. And the personal failings of men that arise from this unhealthy structure of egoic storytelling. So maybe we can think about what would a better Batman look like? A very meta modern Batman. And if my voice holds out long enough, I'm going to try and describe a meta-modern Batman as a way of exploring a better model of masculinity and what's going wrong with the masculine model that we have at the moment. And regular listeners to the Science Fiction Podcast will know that I'm, alongside my interest in storytelling, I'm very interested in developmental models of human development and also civilizational development and how they are linked together. And I'm not going to repeat too much of that. What I am going to acknowledge and nod to are all the problems with developmental models. That if you take a developmental model and say some people are higher than others, this is wrong. This isn't what we're trying to do. But what we are trying to do is talk about how we, as men and women as well, go through stages of development. And you see this, you see it in Lacanian psychoanalysis, you see it in the name of the child psychologist, it eludes me at the moment. But there are many ways that developmental models manifest across us. And I use a kind of heuristic for these models that's quite quite commonly used. I didn't develop. But you have an early stage of ego development we can call the heroic, perhaps. It's often the tribal, which leads into then a mythic stage. Well, let's go into them in a bit more detail to do this. So at the heroic stage, you form that heroic model, a fantasy. You can be a hero as a young man, but this is very self-centered. So we try and harness that heroic model into a mythic model, a traditional model. Usually it's culturally religious. So you have this model of being a hero, and we try and harness that, say, to a religious mythos and a cultural structure to give you a tradition that you're going to channel that heroic energy into. But then we have found as a civilization, we need to take people beyond that. So we then have the modern level of development where we're trying to educate you in things like the sciences to make you something like a Renaissance man who's capable of acting beyond the structures of a religion, for instance. And then we go even further than that. We go into the pluralistic phase, the postmodern phase, you might say, where we want you to be able to develop your own value structures in the world so that you can operate in a really advanced form. The problem with this is that it's very difficult to manifest this in the world. It takes years of education. This is what we send you to university for, in advanced levels of study. And all of these different stages clash with each other. If you look at the culture war today, it's largely about the clash of the traditional, the mythic phase, and the modern phase against the postmodern, the pluralistic phase, that they see that as in some ways deformed, that it's difficult for those stages to understand because each stage of development has to separate itself from what came before. Now, this is only a very loose explanation that can be taken apart in many ways. But to put on the table the idea that we need a meta-modern phase of development, we need to consciously say to ourselves that the heroic and the traditional and the modern and the plural all need to be brought together so that we can fully develop as men, as human beings. And the label that's most commonly given to that integration is the meta-modern. So how can we explore this in a less abstract format? Well, how about I try and describe a very meta-modern Batman just on the hoof? I'm going to try and describe a 2-hour Batman movie that would be essentially meta-modern. Even as I say this, I feel that I am biting off more than I can possibly chew. So the entertainment value for you, the listener here, is going to be me probably failing to do this, and you'll be able to pick it apart. But I'm going to try nonetheless. I'm going to try to Hollywood pitch a meta-modern Batman. I quite like the Batman of 2022, but I think we can do better. And I'm going to structure this meta-modern Batman around those stages that I just outlined for you, but backwards. So we're going to start at the meta-modern stage. We're going to go back then to the pluralistic stage. Correction. The metamodern is the combination of all of these. So we're going to start at the pluralistic, the postmodern stage. We're going to go into the modern, the scientific stage. We're going to go back to the traditional, the mythic stage. And we're going to end at the tribal, heroic stage. So there's going to be four parts, four major acts to this Batman story. So let me set this up for you. Firstly, a question that we're trying to address here in describing a very meta-modern Batman. How could the Batman and Bruce Wayne actually make Gotham City better? Gotham is going to be our sandbox for the exploration of a masculine myth that could actually make the world better. Because I have never seen a telling of Batman where Batman had the slightest positive influence in Gotham. Either Gotham is too corrupt or Batman is too shallow to do it in any of the tellings. So we want a Batman that actually changes Gotham for the better. I'm going to take a quick sip of water here. This is my second recording today. If you are listening at this point, I'm going to do a quick advertisement for becoming a member of the Science Fiction Podcast. I suspect if you're still listening here, you are my target audience for membership. Many of you will already be members. It's my second recording today because I just recorded a new video essay, audio track on the poetics of Neuromancer. I didn't intend to do so many video essays quite close, so close together. The first two video essays on the disappointment of open world video games, that was episode one. Episode two was Incel Batman, that this is a commentary on. And I'm going straight into episode three, the poetics of Neuromancer, for two reasons. One, the emergence of generative AI art has given me some inspiration and impetus to make that Neuromancer essay that I've had in my notebook for 2 years. Two, the first two essays have performed okay. They've got about 1,500 views. I know for many people building up their online audience, it would be amazing to get 1,500 views in 24 hours or a few days after that. But I want to push further because the science fiction channel on YouTube, overall, I think we have about 8,000 active listeners, members of the community, people who are really involved. Maybe not listening to every episode, but they're there dropping in for the episodes that are interesting to them. And in the dynamics of online content creation, I want you to think about a power graph, the long tail graph, this is often called. Visualize it. It's a long flat line for about 90% of the graph. And that is all the podcasts and YouTube channels and blogs and social media accounts that basically nobody ever sees. A few friends and family look at them. And that's 90% of all of the content made. And then you start to curve upwards towards a steep line that goes almost directly up. And that point where it's going directly up is the top 0.1% of content creators who receive almost all of the attention. At about 8,000 people engaged, science fiction across the podcast and YouTube channel, the Facebook community, go and join if you aren't a member yet, is in the middle of that upward curve. And getting there in itself is extremely difficult and rare. To get beyond that, I want you to picture me as a man cranking a kind of World War One airplane, back when you needed a big crank to get the engine going, or that could be done manually, and cranking it with each video essay put onto YouTube. And at some point, one of these essays is going to go bang! And it will accelerate the whole science fiction community to a much larger size. I want to do this, of course, for my own personal reasons, but I also want to do it to have this critical perspective. There are critics, a small handful of critics I really like and admire, but I think most of what's happening, especially in the YouTube space, is driven by culture war issues. I've spoken about this before on the podcast, and I think I can do better. And so I'm cranking the handle And the more of you who become members at this point, the more energy you're giving my arm to do that cranking. And you're giving me more turns to try and kickstart the community as a whole. A year from now, I don't think the membership support will be so vital. But at the moment, if you become a member right now, it's tremendously supportive at this point in time. So please do. You can do it on DamianGWalter.com. You can do it on Patreon. You can do it on YouTube. I'm still putting, by the end of next week, the full membership will be in place. But you can go and do it right now. And this is the best time to do it. If you value this, if you value the community, now is the time to lend me your strength to really make this happen. Okay, thank you. That is my pitch. You'll hear this a few more times among regular listeners. So let's get into it. A meta-modern Batman. Now I require another sip of water. A very meta-modern Batman, which is going backwards, as I said. My notes have locked themselves into my iPad in front of me. Okay, let's give you the setup here. This is Bruce Wayne at his peak, in his late 40s. Maybe a little bit fast past his physical prime. I'm not going to go all the way into Dark Knight territory, much as I love Frank Miller's Dark Knight. He's not retired. He's always been the Batman, but he's at his absolute prime. He's the best, most skilled fighter he's ever been in the Batman persona. And he's gathered tremendous power as Bruce Wayne. I think we underestimate that Bruce Wayne is also a Lex Luthor. And this should be manifested. And this is how we're going to tell the pluralistic postmodern part of the Batman story. And it's going to be structured around an election. I think elections are our modern Olympic Games. They're the focus of so much drama in our real world, but we rarely tell them as a story. And yet they unlock so much of the meaning of our modern, our postmodern civilization, because it's all about storytelling, competing narratives. There is an episode of the science fiction video series coming up all about narrative warfare, built around Philip K. Dick's The Man in the High Castle. But anyway, let's not go down that rat hole. So this whole Batman movie is built around an election. And when we meet Bruce Wayne, he is being courted by all of the candidates for the election. And there would be, we might have, you know, maybe a kind of Trumpian figure. When we see Bruce Wayne, initially in this stage, we see a montage of his television interviews. And he's pretending to be a kind of reactionary, slightly right-wing figure. And he says outrageous things in the way that a Trump billionaire or an Elon Musk billionaire do. But we kind of get the impression this is a bit of a pantomime. We know that Bruce Wayne does that. And then we see many different Bruce Waynes as the different candidates for mayor of Gotham come to pay homage to the billionaire Bruce Wayne, by far the most powerful man in Gotham, who can pretty much make the election, perhaps. He meets the Republican candidate, and he's all there as a kind of conservative, pro-military guy. And then he meets the very progressive candidate, who we are inclined to rather like in this story. No, maybe I'm going to adjust that. That's not the progressive candidate. He meets the progressive candidate who's very radical. Maybe she's a kind of AOC type character, a bit too radical for some of the audience. But Bruce says all the right things to her as well, wins her over completely. He gives money to all the candidates. And then the liberal candidate comes in, and we're really supposed to like this candidate, a kind of JFK, maybe even a little bit of Barack Obama. And now I'm going to give the end away, because in this kind of description, I can't do too much setup. The liberal candidate who we really like, who is really charming, is the bad guy. Okay? They're the bad guy. I'm not going to pull the wool over your eyes. Because now a pair of journalists come to visit Bruce Wayne. One is a kind of Julian Assange type character, very abrasive, not very likable, but has important information. Information he's teaming up with Vicky Vale to bring to the world. This is the first time Bruce and Vicky have met. She's probably too young for Bruce, but we'll get over that. And she's working with the Julian Assange type character to bring this story to the world. Let's just place it in contemporary events. There's interference in this election. Let's just say from a foreign power, so I don't alienate my listeners who may be living in countries that have currently been caught interfering in elections in democratic nations, okay? But this is happening. There's kind of major interference in the election, and one of the candidates is implicit in this. We don't know which. We'll keep that as a tension going through. So this is our postmodern stage, Bruce Wayne. He's like, these are sometimes called a spiral wizard. He can get on and talk with and move easily through all of these different stages of human and civilizational development. Okay, is that clear? Good. Okay, that's stage one. Stage two, Bruce is going to take on this investigation into some kind of foreign intelligence agency dabbling around, super powerful. Maybe it's an organized crime kind of thing, a specter type of thing, perhaps. So now we're going to go into the modern scientific Bruce Wayne, / Batman, high-tech investigation. Bruce has everything. He can tap into cell phones. We know he's not supposed to do that, but he can do it. He has, you know, incredible forensic skills using science and technology. And Act 2 of the movie is all about using science and technology ultimately to foil a terror attack. So we need some Batman action. So there's going to be some kind of terror attack, and Bruce as Batman will go and fight them. That will be the end of Act 2. And he's working with Vicky Vale and the really charismatic liberal politician who is setting up as the good guy still, although you know he's the baddie. He's working with them to do this. And maybe there's a bit of romance between Bruce and Vicky along the way. That's Act 2. Lots of gadgets, bit of fighting, a nice set piece foiling a terrorist attack. But maybe it's actually a fake terrorist attack, because now we're going to move into actually my favorite third act here now. The traditional mythic phase. Very important. We want to tell a story here that actually the mass of people can get into. A mythic hero. And this is how we're going to do this. Okay. The election is unfolding. It's election day. Bruce is with the charismatic liberal politician who he's put most of his support behind. Vicky Vale is with them. And then there is an attempted assassination on that nice charismatic liberal politician who's actually the bad guy. Bruce and Vicky are in the column of limousines. It's driving them through some part of Gotham City. Now, one of my favorite action sequences of all time is from the first Harrison Ford Tom Clancy movie, which I now forget the name of, where Harrison Ford saves a politician. There's an attempted assassination. And Harrison Ford, you know, fights the various attackers. And I want to do this with Bruce Wayne. So he can't get into his Batman disguise. He has to save the politician, and there are cameras. So as Bruce Wayne, he takes out like a team of 12 heavily armed former special forces, black ops assassination crew in a very gritty fight. We're talking like kind of Bourne Identity, you're slamming car doors on people, disarming soldiers, shooting a few people maybe. I'm not into the Bruce Wayne not killing people. Look, if you kick someone in the gut as hard as Bruce Wayne does or throw them off a building, there would be whole convalescent homes full of crippled people. I'm not sure it wouldn't just be better to kill them. You can disagree, the audience who are still with me out there at the 45-minute mark here. Little bit to go. Okay, so Bruce does his Batman stuff, but as Bruce, with cameras. Maybe it reveals it's the Batman. Maybe there's some cover story. The important thing is the people of Gotham, unprompted, or maybe there's some a little bit of a campaign here, who knows, whatever is most believable, they write Bruce Wayne's name onto their voting slips, their ballot papers, in such numbers that he wins the election. This act of incredible, mythic heroism, courage, wins the election for Bruce Wayne. Of course he doesn't accept it. It's not legal. But he gives the tacit approval to the highly charismatic, liberal, JFK-style politician, who we know is really the bad guy, who then becomes mayor of Gotham. And then there's a twist, a big twist. The big twist is a second attack, but this time on the car, a car bomb, perhaps, in the car of Vicky Vale that kills her. We've done this before. I'm really sorry, women out there, that I'm using your token character in this story to motivate the male character. I'm so sorry. I am making this up. Maybe we can do better. Maybe she's not killed. Maybe instead Bruce Wayne is blown up. He's not killed, but he's in a coma for a few months. Let's do that instead. I think that's better. Wakes up, long period of convalescence, montage of Bruce's convalescence, and a slow realization that the man he has got elected, the man he fought to save, the very charismatic liberal politician, is the proxy of the evil organization. And now, some months later, he's making a run for president, and he's going to win. He's completely corrupt. He's corrupted Gotham. He's fooled Bruce Wayne. He has provided an in for this evil criminal syndicate representing some unspecified foreign power who want to bring down democracy, that this man will do. He's going to be a fascist if he's allowed to win, and he's definitely going to win the election. Act four, the tribal heroic. And this is why I'm saying that Bruce Wayne kills people. Okay. The heroic hero, the tribal hero, is not the mythic hero. He's a more brutal character than that. And this is why this is a meta-modern story. Because the reason why we don't want Bruce or Clark to kill people is that we don't want to go to this place, but the audience does. And there's a good reason for that. And this is the part where we talk about integrating masculine identity. That the reality of our power in the world is that if we really want to make Gotham a good place, we need that postmodern Bruce, you know, who can operate at all levels of society, super emotionally intelligent. We need that modern Bruce, the scientific Bruce, with all his gadgets, with all his abilities to use technology for good. We need the mythic Bruce, who can be a hero for the people. And now we need the tribal heroic Bruce, who can, when it's necessary, kill the bad guy. So we see Bruce for the first time put on the Batman costume, which is more like a special forces outfit, maybe with some pointy ears. He hasn't worn this outfit for quite a long time. He's picking up an old persona. It wasn't retired, but it just hasn't been necessary to do. And he's well armed. And he, one man, goes into the mayoral, perhaps the presidential compound. He takes out the 12 different guards guarding the place. He gets into the offices of the corrupt but highly charismatic politician. He extracts a confession from him, which is all he needs with the other evidence to out him. And then he kills him because he's not going to let this happen. He's not going to let fascism take over from democracy, and he will do whatever is necessary to stop it. And that's why he's a meta-modern Batman, because he can operate at all that stages. And I think this is what we need for our archetypal story. There is no one archetypal story. But what we need to talk about for all of our men at all ages is the need to integrate these different stories, and that they can't be allowed to fight. You need to progress all the way up to the postmodern. That skill set of emotional intelligence and understanding the real dynamics of your society, being a systems thinker and going beyond that. You need that. We need as many men to get to there as possible. We need great scientific thinkers. We need technologists. We need industry, all of that level of civilization and of our consciousness. We need myth and tradition. We need people to fulfill the roles of myth and tradition to keep our society going. And we need to honor that. And we need the core tribal heroism that we started with and its potential for violence and aggression. But we need them all integrated and working together. That is the very meta-modern Batman. I don't know if I have more to say about that. I would love to hear about your thoughts on the meta-modern Batman. Am I just wrong to make Batman a killer? Or is that the truth? Do we need to recognize that in order to have a healthy masculine archetype? I think I'm going to bring this to a close here. Come and talk about this in the science fiction community. There's also going to be a new Discord server. It's there. Members will be getting an email, because I finally figured out how to email you all with an invite to that. And should you become a member, you can come along to the Discord server or to the public Facebook group and discuss a very meta-modern Batman. The next episode of Science Fiction on the YouTube channel is going to be The Poetics of Neuromancer. I think there then will be a bit of a break. I have to attend to a few other things. And there will then be a longer form audio commentary here on the podcast feed on William Gibson and Neuromancer, probably next weekend. I'm going to try and work with this alternating structure of the video essay one weekend, the audio commentary the following weekend. Okay, thank you very much and goodbye.